You are tearing me apart, Lisa!
My girlfriend sucked 37 dicks.
In a row?
Hey, buddy, you gonna eat that sausage?
No, go past this. Past this part. In fact, never play this again.
Tell me something, my friend.
Am I the only one around here who gives a shit about the role?
Ladies and gentlemen!
Your complete attention, if you please.
The Epic Film Guys Podcast. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to a very, very special Epic Film Guys spotlight on the Jurassic sequels, not including Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, which we have seen, which we will do damnedest.
We have seen. How am I going to keep quiet about this? How am I not going
to
talk?
We got to try to talk about three other dinosaur movies for the next hour-ish and not talk about the one that we just saw that we're going to be reviewing for episode 149. Of the show. But welcome, we're so thrilled to have you here. I am, of course, Epic Film Guy Nick,
and I am Justin. And Nick, you are correct in the fact that we both just saw the new Jurassic movie, because I literally just saw it for the second time like 40 minutes ago.
Yeah.
And just got home to sit down and talk about these, so it's really going to be difficult. I'm going to do my best to not find parallels between that film and the sequels, or things that connect or don't connect, or it's going to be difficult. But for you guys, this is a special mini-sode. I've been looking forward to this because there are plenty of franchises and sequels and films that we both love that we've talked about before that we want to get to on the show that we've never actually discussed or reviewed on the show. So this will be a fun time for both of us because, well, it's a really big franchise that we both grew up on. And, well, we haven't talked about it on the show, so...
Very, very true. And of course, we did, what was it, episode 146, 147, something like that, that we talked about the original Jurassic Park.
That's right, we did.
That was a blast.
And that was a huge treat, too. I loved it. I loved
that film. That film is a masterpiece, as far as I think both of us are concerned. It's absolutely amazing. So it'll be interesting to see kind of where this minisode veers in terms of the quality of the varying Jurassic sequels. Many people are very aware of my very vocal opinions about Jurassic World, but we'll get there once we get there in the show. But first, Justin, before we continue on with all things dinosaurs, because we're recording tonight and because we've both got a little something, I gotta know, what are you drinking?
I'm back! Puke and rally!
Well, Nick, I had this beer in the fridge for a couple of weeks now, and I totally forgot it was there. Luckily, I looked all the way in the back where my wife pushed it, and I saw it there. It's Aslan Beer Company's San Saba. It's an Imperial Double Stout with pecan, cinnamon, and graham cracker. It's basically the equivalent of a pecan pie, and it's extremely sweet, but not so sweet where it's just like drinking syrup like a couple of their other stouts of similar nature. It's pretty delicious. I'm not getting as much cinnamon as I'd like, but the pecan is definitely there right up front, and the graham cracker is there as well. Definitely a great dessert beer. I would never be able to have more than one of these, but I'm enjoying it, and it's perfect for tonight. Sweet for a sweet franchise. I know that was a pretty lame connection there. Ooh, yeah, I'm getting lame on the show tonight. But hey, man, what do you have guzzling down your gullet?
All right. Well,
what are you boozing on?
Appropriately enough, yesterday at the North Brewery, which you always scold me for not going to the North Brewery because it's about a mile from my house, they had an event called Hold On To Your Butts. I'll talk about it more in the full episode of episode 149 of the Epic Film Guys podcast, but all of their beers were Jurassic Park themed, and I got three beers technically, but I got two crawlers. And I decided to have this one tonight because it's most appropriate for the Jurassic sequels. This is Paul Kirby's Desperation. This is an IPA, and it's got a nice kind of citrusy, nice tropical nose to it. It tastes like you're drinking Site B in a glass. You know, if you were to distill it down, it is a really, really good beer. It's very light. It's very easy drinking. This whole crawler, I'll be able to drink it no problem. It's not super heavy like your beer. You know, I could not even imagine drinking more than one of your beers either. But this, of course, Paul Kirby is one of the lead characters in Jurassic Park 3, William H. Macy's character. And spoiler alert, this beer is better than the entirety of that movie, bar none. So
wow,
and it's not even like a great IPA. It's good. It's really good and really drinkable. But yeah, that's where we're going to be approaching Jurassic Park 3 from. But we'll get there when we get there. I've got another beer from there, Justin. I can't wait to talk about tomorrow on the show. Like I said, when we do our recording for episode 149. So why don't we do this? Why don't we do this right now?
I'm down. Let's let out a T-Rex roar, man. That iconic roar and jump right into it. I'm wearing my Jurassic Park tank top.
I'm wearing my Clarion University shirt. That's yes.
I mean, I wear Jurassic Park on my sleeve every day because, as you know, I've got Rexy tattooed right on the right shoulder, baby.
That's true.
So I'm all Jurassic'd out. So let's do it, man. So let's go back. Let's go back to 1997, man.
4 years after the original film.
That's right.
Four years. Spielberg returning to the chair.
And this is his first film that he did after Schindler's List.
Man.
He took time off. Because making the first Jurassic Park and then jumping right into Schindler's List as he was doing post-production on Jurassic Park. And he won all those Oscars after that. I feel like the man deserved a break. But then he said the next movie he wanted to make was definitely going to be a sequel to Jurassic Park. And rightly so. I feel like it was the perfect time to do it. It had been 4 years. And with sequels, you don't usually want to go past more than 3 to 4 years. I know now, in today's day and age, it's like this trend of doing sequels to movies that were like 20 years ago.
And we also have to remember, it wasn't just that they needed to write a script for this, but after the first Jurassic Park film, Crichton needed to write another book. Like, there was no sequel book, so they really pressured Crichton to write a sequel to the Jurassic Park novel, and that's another reason why it also took as long as it did.
And Spielberg supposedly, through the grapevine I've heard, had some creative input on the book with his meetings with Crichton. I don't know how true that may be, but he really did want to shape his film based on Crichton's work because that's the original literature that gave him the idea to make the first movie.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm going to go back in time to seeing this. I remember there was huge hype for this sequel. I remember seeing it opening night. I've seen every one of the Jurassic Park movies in the theater, much like the Batman franchise. I've seen all of them in the theater opening night. And I remember the aura, the feeling in that room. It was just excitement. Everyone loved the first film. I don't ever recall meeting anyone or knowing anyone in school that disliked the first movie. So it was packed house. And upon my initial reaction, I was extremely happy with The Lost World Jurassic Park.
Mommy! Daddy! I found something!
A British family on a yacht cruise stumbled upon Site B.
And now it's only a matter of time before this lost world is found and pillaged.
Hopefully we've kept this island quarantined and contained, but I'm in shock about all this.
I don't think I necessarily disagree with my initial reaction of the film. I think that, if anything, rewatching this film, and especially I've talked to you about this, I rewatched this film immediately after the first film. Like, now we've had the separation of time. It's been 25 years since that first film. So when you watched this film originally in theaters, you'd had 4 years since the original film, you know, and you kind of, you get swept up in it again. You kind of get swept up in the whole dino madness kind of thing. I think coming out of the first film, I think a lot of people were probably a lot happier with the second film. Some aspects therein, we'll say. That those things haven't aged as well over time as you get to kind of watch it in context with the first film and then compared to the third film, which we'll talk about soon here. I think there are good parts of Jurassic Park, The Lost World. There are good parts, but there are some woefully, woefully shitty parts. And I'll say this. I feel like when I rewatch this film, it feels like a half-baked remake of the first film. They hit most of the same beats that they hit in the first film, and then they slap this King Kong-esque ending on it where a Tyrannosaurus gets loose in a city. A la the ending of King Kong. I mean, this movie's the King Kong. It's King Kong. The Lost World is King Kong.
Yeah, let's make it clear. So to those of you that haven't seen it in a while or have never seen it, so The Lost World Jurassic Park is a story that takes place 4 years after the events of the original film. And it's a separate
another island.
It's a separate island called Isla Sorna.
No reason whatsoever.
So this is supposedly an island that was a different site, Site B, if I recall, where the clone dinosaurs made by Hammond's InGen have been roaming free in their own ecosystem. All right, which never was mentioned in the first film. And
it
so
even,
at this
like,
point
the
in
logistics
time,
of it don't even fucking make sense. Like, why? Imagine like the amount of resources it would take to move some of these fucking dinosaurs from one island to the other once they're they grown enough, or I don't even know. I don't even fucking know.
Yeah, I don't know if they just laid the eggs there after or if they let them incubate and be born. I don't know. But so at this point in time, we're led to believe that Hammond's health is going nowhere. He's on his deathbed, basically. So his nephew's taking control of InGen. And of course, American greed comes into play. And they're going to go over to the island and take all the dinosaurs off the island so they can bring them to a new park in San Diego.
Yep.
Let's not just waste all that money and time that was spent on cloning the dinosaurs. Let's bring them over to a new park. And of course, that's where we get back Ian Malcolm from the first film, Jeff Goldblum returning, the only main character of the first film coming back other than Attenborough.
Hammond and Lex and Tim all show up, but they're very brief cameos.
But there's a cameo. So those are cameos. Yeah. Make that clear. But as far as a main role in the film,
you know, there's no
Goldblum's
Grant, there's
back.
No Ellie, there's, you know.
That's right.
You know, Nedry, of course, was, you know, eaten by a Dilophosaurus.
I would have loved to have seen his skeleton, though. I would have loved to see his skeleton or his half-eaten body laying there rotting after all those years. Just see a skeleton wearing the Hawaiian shirt that looks way too big on the skeleton, you know?
Look like it's draped in like a Hawaiian tarp or something.
Exactly. That'd be amazing. Yeah, so but no, yep.
They have to basically... Hammond's nephew, as you said, has taken over control of InGen, which is the company that, you know, owns Jurassic Park, all the blah, blah, blah,
and
blah,
engineered the dinosaurs.
Engineered the dinosaurs. So they want to go in and they want to save them. So Hammond has sent Ian's girlfriend, Julianne Moore, who is shockingly not naked in this movie. It's PG-13, so that's why. She gets nude in a lot of her movies, is what I'm saying. She ends up going to because he doesn't want to go anywhere near dinosaurs ever again. Malcolm doesn't. And then... Well, because his girlfriend's on the island, now he has to go there. You also get a very young Vince Vaughn, who was just arrested for DUI in this movie.
Well, yes, now, finally, after all these years, he got arrested. But this is coming right off of Swingers, the movie he did with Jon Favreau that basically gave him his start.
Pretty much.
And let's not talk about the Psycho remake. Let's not. But this is definitely... Yes, we have a good cast here. Okay, I think Vince Vaughn is actually pretty good in the movie. I think a lot of the decent laughs we have come from his character. But
he's not over the top in this film, which I don't think would have really worked in this film if he was kind of that Vince Vaughn over the top Vince Vaughn character. I don't think that would have worked at all. And yeah, you're right. You've got an excellent cast in this, and let's not forget Pete Postlewaithe as Roland, who is probably one of the best characters to pop up in this film. He's basically on the island because he wants to hunt the T-Rex, which I think is really cool.
She's there to document these animals so that way the records aren't lost. So that way the public know. Because at this point in time, it's still conceived that this stuff that happened on the island could be myth, that could be made up lies. Like
you have in the film at the beginning, Ludlow's character, you know, he says to Malcolm that, you know, basically you're kind of right where they've able to kind of turn this thing into myth. They basically say that everything that happened at the first Jurassic Park, like they're completely fictionalizing everything, is completely blown out of proportion, blah, 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 blah. You know, none of it's real. They kind of try to play that fact off like that. Here's what needs to happen in this, and this will also come back in Jurassic Park 3, Justin. But basically, you need a reason to get characters to an island full of dinosaurs where... Hijinks ensue. That's basically the only reason why the plot of the second and third film exist, is to get you to an island and then you can watch dinosaurs chase people for the majority of the runtime. That is exactly what the plot of the second and third films are, like bar none. So the Jurassic sequels, for me, and I'll let you in on this in a moment, Justin, but for me, the Jurassic sequels, I get that there's not a lot of real plot directions wherein you can take a movie where you're having people chased by dinosaurs. Okay, fine. There's not a lot of things you can do plot-wise. I've said this often about like genres like comedies and things. The plot for pretty much every comedy film is the same. It's the cast involved. It's how intelligent the script uses that same formulaic type of plot that really elevates it. And it succeeds in some fashions here. Like I said, it introduces Roland. I love Roland's character. I think that's great. But this script also decides to give Ian Malcolm a daughter who they send to the island with him. And again, hijinks ensue. Hijinks ensue to the point where she's doing fucking gymnastics and kicks a raptor out of a window.
But I'll say this much. I'll say this much, though. That doesn't bother me as it much as it bothers so a fucking lot much. Of people. Like, dude, it's one little... I get it. I totally get it. But at the same time, I'm like, it's one thing. Well, it's one thing that happens. I'll say,
I think that that's symptomatic of the fact that that character exists in the first place, because I don't think that that character needs to exist in the first place.
Well, see, we know he has kids because he mentions it in the first film. He says he has kids, as in plural. So
always
we never go any further than that.
Future ex-Mrs. Malcolm.
Exactly.
I think he's got three kids in the first film he mentions.
I think for the obvious reason, all of these movies require, Nick, a kid that's put in danger. If there's not a kid put in danger, that audience member that's a kid isn't going to necessarily connect as well as they would if it's just a bunch of adult, old, gray-haired men running around on the island getting eaten. So, but again, this one for me, I feel like the relationship between Goldblum and his daughter isn't sold very well.
I agree 100%.
It's tough for me. I don't buy it. It definitely feels like a secondary idea to the rest of the film. It's not anything that's at the forefront. We don't really care that much about her daughter.
It feels like the film doesn't need it. And you're right. I agree. You're right that these films need to put a child in danger. So
because if you look at the first,
we like them basically. Yeah.
Well, that kids in danger, that's his favorite thing. But when you see the first film, Lex and Timmy in danger, that's one of the best parts about the movie, because it adds real stakes to it and it adds some of the best tension and suspense in those scenes. So, it's Spielberg too. And what Spielberg film doesn't have a kid in it?
That's true.
Every one of them has a kid in it. Everyone. Spielberg likes having child actors on set.
The problem
he likes working with children.
Not all child actors are created equal. And
that's correct.
Not all
that's
child
correct.
Actors are treated the same by the script. And Kelly does not get the same kind of screen time that Lex and Tim got in the first film. And she's not nearly the kind of endearing character. Like in that film, in the first film, you have Grant, and Grant doesn't like kids. So they immediately throw the kids into the mix with Grant. So you've got kind of that subplot of you get to know more about the kids. You get to spend more time with the kids. And at the same time, it's character development for Grant. In this case, she doesn't do anything to develop Malcolm's character. She doesn't add anything to Malcolm's character whatsoever. Whether she's in danger or not, whether you have those scenes or not, is beside the point. If you remove her from this film, nothing fundamentally about it changes. If you remove the kids from the first Jurassic Park, something huge fundamentally changes about that film, especially Grant's character. And I think that's why she feels like she doesn't really need to be here, because she doesn't.
I totally agree with you. That's one of the things that I find that's completely unnecessary about the film, but I understand why it's there. But Nick, I'm going to jump right in real quick here. I agree with what you said. And when you think about any sequel to Jurassic Park after the first one, when they're sitting around, I always talk about this analogy. Visualize the suits in the room sitting on the table in the boardroom at Universal. How do we get them back to the island?
Yep.
The dinosaurs are still there. They're not dead. We've established they're there. How do we figure out an idea to get them back there so we can have more dino action?
Yep.
So for me, I kind of give them a pass on almost all of the sequels in that sense, because we know it's the only way. They're not on mainland yet. We'll say that much. Okay. So they're not walking around in fucking Kansas. All right. You have to go to the island and you have to have things happen there. But for me, like, this movie gives me some of my favorite moments of the entire franchise. One of my favorite sequences, okay, we had in the first one, we had the T-Rex. It's everyone's favorite. It's my favorite. It's iconic. Yep. But in the second one, Nick, they decide to give us not one T-Rex.
But three, technically. Two adults and an infant.
Three. And the infant is, in my opinion, one of the most astonishing practical animatronic effects
ever
that they've ever
done. Wonderful practical effects.
I mean, I absolutely love seeing the T-Rexes together. I love the sequences where we have both the male and the female interacting and causing mayhem. I think my favorite scene in the film, which has got legit, genuine tension, is the trailer hanging over the ledge of the cliff. I really like that scene a lot. I don't know how you feel about it, but for me, I think that it still has that Spielberg flair to it. Whereas sometimes in the sequels, you know, we have action sequences that just feel wrong. They don't have that flair to them that Spielberg likes to put it where. But for me, I think that that scene adds genuine tension to the film, and it gives us the same feeling we had in the first Jurassic Park, where we have, there's genuine danger to the characters in the film. And we've got two T-Rexes that are basically knocking this trailer off the cliff. Now, I get it, Nick. I understand that they should have never picked up the baby T-Rex and brought it back to the trailer. I know it's a dumb idea, but it leads us to one of the best scenes in the film.
Yeah, I won't really hate on that all that much. And I think one of the most engaging aspects of this film, and I think the aspect of this film that still makes it work on at least some level, is that the dinosaurs, for the most part, like the T-Rexes definitely are teetering more toward movie monsters at this point. The raptors definitely are. But you get to see early on in the film, you get to see the InGen team arrive, and you get that whole sequence where they're capturing all the dinosaurs.
Yes.
And for the most part, I think that this film, and this is something that we're going to get to when we get to later sequels especially, they still treat them like animals, and there are no protagonist dinosaurs, okay? The dinosaurs ultimately are still just animals that are still just trying to survive. Like, that's their only goal. Like, they just... Like I said, the trailer sequence, it does lilt a little bit into that kind of movie monster sort of thing, but you don't really mind because it makes sense, because you idiots are fucking dumb enough to bring a baby Tyrannosaurus back to your fucking trailer, then you deserve to get it pushed over the edge of the fucking cliff. You know, it works. The justification for it in the plot makes sense. Even when they have to go to the communications place and they have to go through the fucking long grass, the scene of all the raptor tails converging through the fucking tall grass is a great shot.
Love that scene. Beautiful shot.
There's still some magic in this fucking film. There's still some greatness in this film. But Justin,
I think that's what, when you watch this, Nick, I think that's where, when you look at the sequels later on, where that's missing, you know that it's Spielberg. Even though this isn't Spielberg at his peak like he was with the first film, you immediately miss him when we get to the next film. We'll talk about that. But again, this is not his best work.
Yeah.
This is not nearly on par with the first one, especially like you
not
said.
Not even close. When
you
and watch, I don't think it directly, is at a script level either. I don't think that's all Spielberg's fault either.
No, but I mean, again, I think that for a sequel to a classic film that was as revolutionary as it was, as many people that love that, I think it serves its purpose, and I think it does a pretty good job. It gives us the thrills. It gives us the fun.
Yeah.
And personally,
you've got annoying asshole characters in this movie, like
Dieter. We do.
The dude that is against the little compies and stuff like that, and they end up getting him and killing him and stuff like that. It's all so telegraphed from 1,000 miles away. Like, is it kind of funny and whatever to see him get his comeuppance? Sure, fine. But stuff like that, like, there's not really anything like that in the first film. And I think that that's the direction that these Jurassic sequels go into, is that you start to see more and more of that kind of thing. Where does it need it, I guess, is really, really the question. But I want to get to this before we wrap on this film. The thing that kills this film for me, and the thing that kills this film, I think, for a lot of people, is the final act. And the final act of this film, they get the T-Rex on the cargo ship, which randomly everyone on board dies because the script needs them to.
And we don't know why they die. We have no idea why they die, because as far as we know, the T-Rex is still in its containment area.
Listen, it didn't sneak back into the hold of the fucking ship and reclose the fucking doors, okay? All right, so you've got that whole bunch of bullshit. Then this thing gets loosened, and you've got some funny shots. It's drinking out of the pool and stuff. The dog's barking at it, and then it's eating the dog or the doghouse hanging out. Okay, fine. Like, there's some funny stuff, but it's all so ludicrously over the top that I think if you would have cut that entire sequence off of the end of the film, like, I don't know necessarily where you end the film for the On the Island story, unless you just end it with them leaving again.
Do you want to know, Nick, what the original ending was?
What was it?
So, to those that are uninitiated with the story of how Spielberg constructed the third act, the third act we see in the film now. The original ending of the film was going to be them leaving the island and some Pteranodons coming down, like finally actually seeing them in the movie.
They didn't want to have the
Pteranodons in the film. And they were going to come down. It was going to be an aerial battle, an aerial action sequence with them. It was going to be like a battle with the Pteranodons and some helicopters. Spielberg was on set. He was sitting there and it just rang to his head. He said, you know, I'd love to, I just really want to see the Tyrannosaurus like in the United States, like roaming around. He had said it was as a fan and as a growing up as a kid, loving monster movies and King Kong. He said, I want to make my own King Kong. That's, he says it, he admits
shocking.
It. So he knows he jumped shark with it and that's all we have. But personally, Nick, I disagree with you. I love the ending. I know it doesn't really fit with the rest of the movie, but for me, it's just that monster movie fun. I think we'll get to this with all these films.
Yeah.
All of them. But I mean, once you get past the first film, it's hard to go back. You're never going to recapture the magic of the first one ever, no matter how hard you try. You may get glimpses of it and pieces of it, but in this case, Spielberg knows what he's got in front of him. He just wants to have fun. And I think for the most part, for general audiences, it works. I think it's fun. I like it.
I would agree for the GA. I think it definitely works. I don't think that the general audiences would have any problem with this. So why don't we go ahead? Why don't we slap a quick rating on this and then we'll move on to Jurassic Park 3.
All right, Nick. Well, for me, I give The Lost World Jurassic Park a solid 7 out of 10. For me, I'm a huge fan of the franchise in general, even the bad. I deal with the bad and the good. This one delivers the goods for me on a surface level. I love seeing the animatronic T-Rexes there together. There's some great kills in there as well. In this one, it's a little more sadistic because some people get killed that really don't even deserve it. They're not even on the level of the lawyer, but I still like seeing them get ripped to half and shaken all around and eaten. And well, that's what I like seeing. I'm sadistic, you know, minus the raptor getting kicked through, with gymnastics. I don't care about that. That's fine. 7 out of 10 for me. I'll watch it any day of the week.
I'm going to still land on the positive side of the fence, but barely. I'm going to go 6 out of 10 on this. Like I said, I still feel like the character of Kelly is completely ridiculous and does not need to be in the film. And the ending of the film, I enjoy like the visual of it. Like if I just watch that by itself and I pretend that the movie before it didn't happen, I'm fine with it.
But can I tell you this much, Nick, though? Not to cut you off there. But, dude, this film really is on the shoulders of Jeff Goldblum. If it wasn't for Goldblum, I don't think this movie would be as good as it is because he literally carries the weight of this movie on his back.
Well, this is where our very own Loy Sauce would probably disagree because our very own Loy Sauce is on record as saying that this Malcolm and the Malcolm in Jurassic Park 1 are not even the same character.
I mean, he's had 4 years to reflect. I mean, come on, people change. That's the way I look at it. I love Goldblum. And at the time, he wasn't like a huge star, but seeing him in a leading role like this, for me as a fan, I love him.
Yeah,
he's one of the biggest parts of this franchise that rules.
I do agree to a degree with Loy Sauce that I don't think he's necessarily hitting the same character beats. Like, he doesn't have that same kind of neurotic kind of chaos, everything is chaos kind of mentality.
He's not as much of a pretentious scientist.
Well, definitely not. Yeah, he's not the rock star as he is in the first film.
And he's not trying to stick his dick in everything either in this one. That's so true. Yeah, that's right.
All right. So from this film, Justin, so a 7 and a 6 so far. We're going to move on to a film that I watched again for the first time in quite a while. And holy fuck, Jurassic Park 3 is terrible. Bad.
A proposition I'd like to discuss with you. I've chartered an airplane to fly us over Isla Sorna, and we'd like you to be our guide. We'd love to make a contribution to your research here.
It could almost be paradise.
My God, I'd forgotten.
We have a landing strip up
here. You cannot land on this island.
Oh my God!
But in this forbidden place, where man has tampered with nature.
This is how you make dinosaurs?
This is how you play God.
I don't even know, man. I mean, dude, I'm going to talk about my initial experience on all of these when I first saw them. And this is one that I remember leaving the theater. This came out 2001. I was in high school. I was always a fan of the first two.
Sweet going Jesus in.
I remember walking out like, what the? What? You killed the T-Rex? Yeah. The T-Rex? You're going to kill the T-Rex in the first... How are you going to kill the T-Rex? No! You can't kill the T-Rex. You know how many fans are pissed that wanted to basically boycott this movie, or they boycott it, or they dislike it because of that? I'm one of them. That's just one of many bad things about it, but well, of you course, can't that was kill because, the T-Rex? This is,
let's get this out of the way, okay?
Come on.
This is Joe Johnston, okay? And he's made... He made The Rocketeer, which I know you absolutely love. He made Captain America. That's right. The first, he's made some good fucking movies.
He made Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, man. I love that movie as well.
I really think, I really think, and we'll get into this as we get further into the Jurassic franchise as well. The problem with the Jurassic sequels starts to become not the person behind the camera, but the person behind the pen. There are so many fucking things in this movie that legitimately make no goddamn sense. None whatsoever. What happens to the people on the boat, Justin? Who knows?
They just vanish.
The plot needs them to disappear. That's what happens to them.
And they literally raptors, disappear. All the cloud sudden, goes over them and they're gone. Yeah. There's blood on the boat. They're
raptors,
gone.
Raptors, all of a sudden, can just break people's necks. What? Wait. What the fuck?
They're doing UFC moves now. They're doing UFC and then moves, dude.
The Spinosaurus is really the first creature in a Jurassic Park film that is 150% movie monster. Straight up. They don't even try to hide it anymore. Like, they don't even care. They bring in the fucking T-Rex because they wanted a dinosaur that would be like, wow, oh, it beat a T-Rex. It's been our villain for the first two movies, the T-Rex. So, man, this Spinosaurus is really something. But, fucking Jesus.
Let's get to the problems this movie had before it was shooting. So, this movie had a number of different scripts prior to shooting.
A lot of different scripts, yep.
And they decided 3 weeks out from going to shoot, they were going to change the script again. So they were actually making shit up as they went on set.
Well, the important thing is here, you know who wrote like one of the treatments for this that didn't end up getting used for the final film, but they still get a writing credit just because of how like WGA credits work, is one of my favorite directors of all time, Alexander Payne, and his writing partner, Jim Taylor. Like,
I was not aware Schmidt, of that. Dude. Oh my God. I had no idea.
My favorite movie of all time, About Schmidt, Sideways, The Descendants, even though they made that fucking piece of shit downsizing, but that notwithstanding, like, they are a proven writing team, but, and we'll get to this when we get to Jurassic World as well, but basically their script, like, I think there's a couple of ideas in here, so they still had to get credit per, like, WGA rules, but their script is not the script that was used to film this film, period.
But they, make no mistake, there are some scenes from Crichton's Jurassic Park and Lost World novel that also made their way in here as well.
Yep, yep, yep. This kind of feels like a dumping ground for all the unused stuff in the first two novels.
and this also takes place on Site B. So this is not
the same site, on the same island, second island that the first that exists for no goddamn reason whatsoever.
That's right.
So
this movie, this is where we get to the plot being as thin as a piece of tracing paper. Okay, because in the second film, okay, I get it. They're going to go back and try to grab the dinosaurs so they can bring them to a new park. I buy that. I 100% buy that. That's how American greed works. That's the way of the world. In this one, we have a young 12-year-old boy who's going parasailing. Nick, let me repeat that. They're parasailing around this island knowing that this is the island that supposedly has dinosaurs. Well,
they're trying to see dinosaurs. Like, at least that's what I get from that opening scene.
Would you really, if this was your stepkid or your kid, or you were the uncle of this kid,
legitimately, think of how good the effects are, and even in the rest of this film and in the other two films in this franchise to date, the fucking green screening in that sequence is horrible.
Oh my God! And Nick, I watched this again. I'm gonna glow.
But jeez!
I watched it on Ultra 4K HD. And this is the film out of all of them that they didn't give a shit about. They literally ran it through a filter and did nothing with it. Because definitely that shows 100%. It looks like literally like 1985 green screen, if that even makes any sense. But we're welcome to this. So the kid's missing and his parents want to go to the island to find him. So they go and find Alan Grant, who's still digging up dinosaur bones. God bless him. He still loves the old way of dinosaur bone picking.
Well, and I love and I don't mean to cut you off there, but I love, there's a line that he says toward the beginning of the film that what John Hammond and Ninja did was create theme park monsters, not dinosaurs.
Exactly.
I love that line. It's a great line. And legitimately, the entire rest of the film is him being chased by theme park monsters. So
exactly.
Yes.
For me, the hardest part for me, the Grant from the first film, I still see in the beginning of this film. Until we see him make the dumbest decision ever. And it's the same exact way that Hammond got him to the first island in the first film, offer to fund further digs for him. And in this case, he takes the bait after he literally just said, nothing could ever get me back on that island.
Yeah. No force goes, on heaven and earth, I believe, is what he says. And then the problem is, it's not, he's just dumb. He's dumb on, like, unconscionable levels, because he already knows they want him to fly over, and he doesn't do legitimately any kind of background checking whatsoever. They throw money at him, and he's like, done.
Yep. Well, they don't even throw money at him. Nick, they ask him how much he wants, and they pull out a blank check.
Yep, exactly. We can just keep putting zeros on
here. These strangers come meet you, and see, in the first one, it makes sense because he knows who John Hammond is. This is the guy that's been funding his dig. Sure, and these are just two random people that show up, and they're like, let's meet you at some shitty bar. Man. Yep, here's a check. Will you do this for me? It makes no sense how he would even know about the other site, because he never went there, ever. He was never told about it. He found out about it after the fact. So, I mean, okay. that's how we get back to Jurassic Park. And we're not even at Jurassic Park.
They land the plane. And I love William H. Macy. Shameless. He's an amazing actor. I like him in this film. But Taya Leone in this fucking movie, I want to gouge my fucking ears out every time she speaks. I hate her character so much in this fucking movie. So much.
Eric!
And then there's this whole side quest of where they're trying to, like, oh, the parents are going to kind of rediscover their love for each other. And the fucking kid survives somehow 8 weeks on this fucking island, doesn't get eaten by any dinosaurs, has T-Rex piss somehow, has all these fucking smoke grenades and weapons and all this fucking food and everything. Fuck you, movie. Make sense. Make literally a shred of goddamn sense.
Now, all the stuff he has, I don't know how that happened. I don't know if this was an indirect homage to Aliens.
I know how he got that T-Rex pee. He sat right underneath it and just milked it.
He just milked it right out of the T-Rex cock, dude. He waited for the cock to come out of its sheath, its little pouch. And then he just milked it right out of it.
Cash money to see that scene in the theater. That would have been great to see. That would have been great.
I know, right?
Why couldn't we have that scene?
And when Grant asks him, how did you don't, it was almost like a, you don't want to know. Yeah,
you don't want to know, like, because the screenwriter can't think of a good reason why. And then it doesn't even end up mattering to the plot of the film anyway. So it's kind of pointless.
Let's talk about one of the most dissatisfying things about this movie. You actually cast Laura Dern to be in a Jurassic movie in a small role, and you don't do nothing. You do nothing with her. And this is something that Loisos brought up, and I know he would love to actually speak for himself on this. But why couldn't Ellie and Grant be together in this movie? Why couldn't it have just been him going off and doing it on his own and her just staying at home with the kids? It would have made sense. Like, why did they not have to be together as fans of the franchise? Sense.
I mean, granted, we get the scene of him playing with her kid at the beginning of the movie, but they're not, she's married to somebody else. They're not together. Like,
as fans of the franchise, that's what you wanted to see, is them together. But instead you give us them not together. We already saw in the first film that he knew how to bond with children. He had he was a fatherly figure by the end
of the first movie.
That's the development of the character. Yep. So now he's single and no kids. And Ellie's got a kid with some other dude. That's just literally like, and you give her like, the dinner scene, which isn't even that good. It's very awkward, not very well directed. The dialogue's stifled and weird. And then you have her later on in the movie.
Plot points into this film that legitimately, like, they wanted to have this whole plot about the raptors in the movie with the fucking eggs and shit. So they take this whole thing of, like, the resonating chamber, the fucking resonating chamber in the movie, all of a sudden the raptors can talk to each other. For whatever reason. And there's no precedent for this in the prior Jurassic Park films, mind you. That's neither here nor there.
We knew they communicated, but not on the level of they're saying now.
No, but then, of course, they have to take those several, because Grant has a theory about raptors that they know how to communicate because of this resonating chamber, blah, 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 blah. And, of course, they have to prove that right several times over the course of the film. But then they've got, at the end of the movie, Grant blowing into it and somehow disorienting the raptors. It doesn't sound anything like they sound at all, whatsoever. It sounds like a dude blowing into a fucking tube.
I mean, to be fair, though, Nick, people use animal calls like a turkey call all the time. That doesn't really sound like a turkey to me.
It's plausible.
That's plausible to me. That's plausible. I mean, that to me doesn't bother me as much. I also don't mind seeing raptors snap necks, even if they are just doing UFC moves.
So fucking
I don't
stupid.
Care.
My God.
But let's talk about the big bad in this. Let's talk about it a little bit more, because the one thing this movie does
really
do right. I have to give it some credit, because this is still at a time when they did want to still put practical effects in here. And I think that the practical effects of the Spinosaurus blended with the CGI is still very well done in a lot of scenes. The film still has one of my favorite scenes in it, which was supposed to be in the original Jurassic Park, which is the boat scene.
Yeah, it's in the original novel.
That's right. And it was originally supposed to be a T-Rex, but in this case, it's a Spinosaurus. And it's probably the one scene that I actually legitimately like in the movie, which is them in the rain. We love seeing dinosaurs in the rain. And the Spinosaurus is trying to attack and kill them while they're on the little boat. I really do enjoy that sequence. I think that's probably, for me, like literally the only thrilling aspect of the film. I do like when they get to the Pteranodon aviary area. I think that's something that they wanted to do for a while in the films, is bring those, even though technically I'm not sure if those are dinosaurs. I know our resident kaiju expert, Robert Moreno, would be able to tell us, because he's a huge dino expert. But it's still an interesting sequence. It's got some good atmosphere. I like the way it's shot and everything. But the only problem with that is it leads us to believe that the Billy character, who just wants to steal raptor eggs and make money, we have to have that greedy character. It's not a Jurassic Park movie. But then he lives at the end. Spoiler alert, he lives.
Yep, he makes it.
Damn it. That's not a good... I want to see that dude eaten.
This film, what it does is it just takes script shortcut after script shortcut after script shortcut to basically present you with a series of action set pieces wherein people are chased by dinosaurs. And it's just tied together by the shittiest, most thinly veiled plot of all time. And it's just bad. It's just not good. Like, especially given the time that has passed and you've been able to watch these films numerous times, reflect back on it, think back on it and everything. It's just...
Even up until now, this is one that I never owned in my collection, Nick. Not on Blu-ray, not on DVD. I never bought it. The only reason I own it now, and you'll own it too if you listen to our Fallen Kingdom review and you win that digital code for the entire set, is because it came with the set. It's a set. I didn't ask for it, but it's there. So, okay, I'll take it. It's part of it. For me, you're giving it a 4 out of 10. I gotta stay lockstep with you, man. I mean, I probably enjoy a couple of sequences a little bit more than you, but this is not a movie that I'll ever willingly go and put it in and say, I want to watch this movie. It was hard to get through it, even on Ultra 4K HD. And when I watched it initially in theaters, I walked away disappointed, and that disappointment still stands.
It's so dumb. And like seriously, like the script, it reaches certain points where it just needs the plot to happen. So it just straight up ignores things like logic. Like seriously, like the what kills the people on the boat in the beginning of the movie? No idea. None. The script kills them because they needed to die. Period. That's the kind of writing that you get in this movie. And when you have movies that are written as lazily as this, that's why you get pieces of shit like this movie. There are some wonderful effects in it. There are some memorable scenes, but Justin,
I still think the raptor stuff in it is good too. Yeah, I'll just say that as we end that. We're going to move on to jump ahead 14 years.
I don't want to. You can't make me.
14
nope,
years.
Not doing it.
That's how much time there was between Jurassic Park 3 and Jurassic World.
Evacuate the island. She's a highly intelligent animal. She will kill anything that moves.
Oh, God.
The film was released in a world filled with comic book movies and superheroes hitting the big screen every few months. It came at a time when I think audiences were yearning for something a little bit different, for another franchise to hit again, much like Star Wars did later that year. Jurassic World hit theaters in June of 2015, Nick, and it had the biggest opening weekend of any movie of all time.
Up to that point. Yep, it did. And
up to that point, yes.
That movie, and it's fascinating to read about it because there were scripts for a Jurassic Park 4 or Jurassic Park sequel all the way back as early as like 2003, 2004. It just constantly kept, like, Spielberg wouldn't approve scripts. He was like, no, 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 no. Different elements from some of those scripts end up making their way forward into Jurassic World, into what will be Jurassic World, including the motorcycles, an open park, all those different elements eventually make their way in here. They're credited for the script, Justin, and they're responsible for a franchise that both you and I adore, and that's Rick Jaffe and Amanda Silver, Rise of the Planet of the Apes, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. Absolutely amazing, amazing writers. But again, when Trevorrow comes in as director, Jaffe and Silver deliver a script, and basically Colin Trevorrow and Derek Connolly completely rewrote the entire thing. They kept some of the ideas, but kind of like Jurassic Park 3, Jaffe and Silver still have to get a writing credit because of WGA rules. But really, this is all a script by director Colin Trevorrow and Derek Connolly. So fans of this show know. Now, Justin and I have been pretty good in terms of Jurassic Lost World. The Lost World, I'm a point lower than Justin. Jurassic Park 3, we're the same. Jurassic World, we vary wildly, wildly in terms of our ratings for this film. Justin, tell us what this film's about.
Okay. So this is about a functioning park where living, breathing, live dinosaurs are on display. It's basically like a huge zoo. It's a theme park. Think of Disney World, but with dinosaurs, where you can go and you can ride on the back of a baby Triceratops or a Stegosaurus, and you can see a Tyrannosaurus eating a goat if you throw a flare at it. This is what we would like to believe as a possible reality, because these animals lived on this planet for millions and millions of years until 65 million years ago, they were wiped off the face of the planet. This is the movie that gives us what it would be like to be at an actual theme park with dinosaurs.
This realizes the vision of John Hammond from the first film. And we're back to site A now. We're back to Ila Nublar. Ila Sorna, that whole bullshit. Site B, it's sort of referenced in the film a couple of times, but basically the events that took place there are really kind of irrelevant to this film. They don't really have much of a bearing on it or anything like that. So we basically get to, you're right, Justin, we get to experience the entire fully functioning park. And by this point in time, the park's been open for a few years. People are just tired of dinosaurs. And this, I love this social commentary in here that Trevorrow layers in here. People have seen dinosaurs for a few years now. Nobody gives a fuck anymore. Blah, blah, blah. They're dinosaurs. Ooh, wow. Who cares? They're dinosaurs.
Because that's how the public would be, 100%
correct.
I feel like.
100% correct. So they decide to genetically, and all these dinosaurs are genetically engineered anyway, but they decide to genetically engineer a new, completely never existed before dinosaur in the Indominus Rex and open it. The Verizon Wireless presents the Indominus Rex. I also love the commentary. There's a reason why I'll be nice to this film in some ways, because I love the social commentaries that Trevorrow layers in here, especially in terms of product placement. That was a deliberate, they did that deliberately in this script.
Yes, they definitely did.
Because they wanted it to be like, this is kind of corporation.
I mean, dude, we even hear Pepsi-saurus, and you know, like, I love those little tidbits of dialogue. Think of
fucking football stadiums nowadays. Like, all of them used to be things like, you know, the Giants Stadium, for instance, used to be the Meadowlands, but now it's MetLife Stadium. You know, corporations own all this shit. So that kind of idea was definitely built into this script. And I love all that stuff. So they decide they're going to unveil this new genetically engineered super dinosaur that never existed before. And once again, Justin, it has to be said, high jinks ensue.
They do. They ensue. And the Indominus Rex just tricks the park employees into coming into the cage and basically letting her out because she's that smart. Now, we are led to believe that this...
Is she that smart, or are the people that run this park that stupid?
That dumb. Yeah. Well, I mean, they do mention, and we know that from the previous films, that the raptors are the most intelligent dinosaurs.
They are.
Yep. And that, you know, they're likened to dolphins, which, you know, some people are saying now that studies say that dolphins are on the level of humans in intelligence and maybe in some ways smarter because they don't kill each other. So, but no, I mean, okay, so it's part raptor, right? Part T-Rex. It's the Indominus Rex. And this thing gets out, and of course...
Here's the problem. Justin will disagree with me. I don't care. But when we talk about the script for Jurassic World, when we talk about the script for Jurassic Park 3, the reason I have big problems is that there are major, stupid things that happen in the plot that make no sense. Okay? Why? Answer me this question, if you will. Why does Henry Wu, who works for InGen, which is owned by Masrani Corporation, not able to tell the CEO of Masrani Corporation what the genetic makeup of the Indominus Rex is? Why? Because the script requires it not to until you find out later in the film that it's part raptor. That's fucking why. It's so fucking stupid. Legitimately go fuck yourself, movie. I'm not this dumb. I don't care if you think I'm this dumb. Fuck off.
Yeah, but you know how many people sitting in the audience watching this movie actually care about that? Yeah, you might be one out of me,
and that's it.
One out of
a lot. I get it. But for me, that's the kind of thing that breaks a movie for me, because it's like, well, wait a minute. Who do you get your fucking paychecks from, Wu? You get them from Masrani Corporation. So, like, I'm not at liberty to divulge the genetic makeup of the Indominus Rex. Go fuck yourself. Yes, you are. You worked for this motherfucker. Like, oh, God damn it. Oh, and it's all because the script needs to wait until later, when the Indominus becomes the alpha of the Raptor squad, to reveal that. That's exactly why that whole fucking thing exists. And let me bring this up too. What is the point of the asset containment department? What do they do? Because they're out in the jungle with glorified cattle prods trying to wrangle in a like 35, 40 foot tall fucking killing machine with cattle prods. What the actual fuck? And then they're just really bad at their job anyway, because they immediately get annihilated. All of them.
To be fair, she can blend in with her environment. She got the drop on him. And it leads us to one of the best, exciting, amazing sequences in the film. I get to see the Indominus grab a guy with her hand and eat his head off. And blood splatters everywhere. I don't give a shit how it got me there. I just want to see the dinosaur eat people, Nick.
This is the divide here between Justin and I when we watch these films. Eventually, Justin just wants to see dinosaurs fucking wreck people. And this movie does it in spades, and it does it well. It does it very well. For me, I can't get past that. Like, what the fuck is asset containment's job? The one time they're actually dispatched to contain an asset, they fail spectacularly.
Honestly, to be realistic about it, you know what they probably should have done? They should have had air support above as well. Tranquilizers, air support, everything. Like, if you're going to have a park like that with that kind of money, you think that Disney doesn't have asset containment? You better believe they got machine guns there in their underground lair.
I don't want to get into it right now. We'll talk about it when we do it on the main show. But think about the opening of Fallen Kingdom.
The liability
of a dinosaur escaping into the park and actually eating people is so high. Hundreds of millions of dollars in settlements, in insurance payouts, in everything that you would have to pay because of an action like that. So I don't care how much the asset costs. Priority number one has to be that you, like, legitimately tranquilize the shit out of that animal until it's fucking comatose and drag it back into its box. Like, it doesn't matter, because and Masrani makes a point to mention it in the film. He's like, that asset's worth $27 million. And I like the way that the film continually refers to the animals as assets. It tries to not like think of them as living, breathing things. Which
but Miss Ronnie says earlier on, though.
Yeah.
But he says it earlier in the chopper, though. See, we see him kind of switch over when it comes to the money aspect, because when he's in the when he's talking to Claire, well, we got to get to the main characters as
we
in a moment here. But he mentions, he's like, "How are the dinosaurs? Are they happy? How are my animals?" You know, like, so he starts off as being like, "Okay, this guy thinks of these as like Hammond did," and you can see that he's hearkening back to Hammond's
original reaching back, yes,
vision, yeah. But then, of course, later on, when shit hits the fan, he's like, the asset.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, you can't.
It's $27 million. We can't lose that.
You can't tell me that in, like, if they run the simulation, because here's the thing. They've already got precedent for a park failing. The original Jurassic Park, Hammond's original idea, failed. Okay? And it took them how many years to wrangle up all these dinosaurs on the park and open Jurassic World and do all this different stuff? Like, the liability. I can't even imagine what Hammond had to pay out in fucking liability for the people that died because of the original park incident. You know, like there.
And in this, way more people die. Way more people die in this.
Yeah. Way more fucking people. So you can't tell me that, like, worst case scenario, like insurance adjusters and like bean counters and fucking everything else did not sit here and be like, if a dinosaur escapes containment and fucking eats people, you're looking at hundreds of millions of dollars. I don't care what the fuck that asset costs. You put it down and you drag it back to its box, or it's a genetic fucking monster. You kill it and make a new one.
But Nick, you know what, though? If they did that, then I would have no movie to watch.
Exactly. So the script,
I don't really care.
The problem I have, and this is a problem that I have with the movie, is that it relies on the stupidity of the human characters to advance the dinosaur characters. If you just have the dinosaurs,
their greed. It's their greed, man. The greed.
I know it's the greed, but it's their greed slash stupidity. They're just too dumb to know how to actually stop this fucking thing. I've been on my soapbox long enough. I know you love this movie way more than I do, so I will let you literally stroke your dick.
Well, no.
Right now.
No. I mean, well, let's get to what the movie actually is, other than what we mentioned. We have Chris Pratt here. We obviously, with the original films, by part three, they were basically taking everyone they could from the original film and using them, whoever they could get. In this case, they're like, okay, we're going to jump in fresh, get some new people in here. Chris Pratt was hot on the heels of Guardians of the Galaxy. He was an up-and-coming star. They cast him as Owen Grady, who's a Navy veteran and Raptor expert and trainer. And we have Ron Howard's daughter, Bryce Dallas Howard, as Claire, who's the operations manager at Jurassic World. So we obviously have the kids here, Gray and Zach Mitchell, which are Claire's nephews, and they're sent by their parents, who are getting a divorce, I guess, which is
this
supposed to be a plot point, but never
really.
This is
one of those plot points that it's like, I wish, like, all you had to do is spend a couple more minutes on it, like, screen time wise.
No, I agree. Yeah.
The reason why the first film works so well is because it spends a lot of time developing and investing you in the human characters. Like, it wants you to care that their parents are clearly not happy and getting a divorce with one throwaway line that Judy Greer says to David Wallace. We're rewatching The Office, so that's why he's David Wallace to me. Just one throwaway line. They want us to give a shit that these parents are obviously, they're going through troubles and they're probably headed for divorce. Like, you have to spend more time investing us in that, or fuck it. Throw it out the window. Don't focus on it. Who cares? You know?
Yeah. But dinosaurs, Nick. Dinosaurs.
God, dude, I hate you so much.
So these kids are going to the park. They're going to meet their Aunt Claire. She's too busy because she's so focused on her job. She actually forgets how old the kids are and what time they should be going to bed. So she makes her assistant, some hot British chick who doesn't give a shit about anything, watch them. And to add into everything, Chris Pratt, like I said, he's our main character that we're following here. I think he's good, though. I think our initial worries, I remember when we talked about the trailer, when the first trailer landed, and then we got an actual scene from the film, and I can remember talking about it with you. We were worried that it wasn't going to work because it didn't seem like they had good chemistry, but I feel like Pratt definitely carries the film well. I think that
Pratt,
the comedy aspects work well. I think the one-liners are good. Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, and especially when we get to Fallen Kingdom, I'll compare the two definitely, because I feel like for the most part, this film has the fun elements. It's got the scary elements. And you know, I feel like the chemistry between Howard.
You've got
exactly
the Hammond Creation Lab. Mr. DNA shows up in a brief cameo. The statue of John Hammond. You get, and especially in this script, even though it's ridiculous that they could start a Jeep with fucking 25-year-old gas in it, you get to see, you know,
the original
visitor center, yep,
the original visitor center,
yep. Which tingles nostalgia boners.
I love that scene. I mean, I don't know what fan could watch that scene. I don't know how you
wouldn't
love
that scene. I don't know how you wouldn't. It's just,
that's what I'm saying,
made ridiculous by the fact that they started a Jeep with 25-year-old gas in it.
Who's thinking about that other than you, Nick?
Me! Exactly. That's the problem. That's what I'm saying. I think too much. You're the
one guy.
You're
that one guy in that packed theater that's like, but that gas is 25 years.
I am the one person that goes to see these movies that can't turn off his brain.
But... not, you don't have to turn your brain completely off.
So, but listen, we've been talking about this film for a while now, and I can't believe you haven't even brought it up yet. Haven't said a fucking word one about it.
Raptor Squad for Life. Hashtag Raptor Squad for Life, motherfucker. I love the Raptor Squad, and Blue is my favorite.
Oh, God.
I want a lunchbox with Blue on it. I want it when you open it, it makes the Raptor sound. I love Blue. I love Raptor Squad. I think it's awesome. I really think the idea of...
I don't understand of course, why they're in the movie. I said it then,
nothing
and I'll
say
it
for
now.
For fan service. Fan service.
Well, besides fan,
fan
service, they don't
I'm
have a purpose
I
in the movie.
See the
they're
Raptors.
Not a park attraction at all. They just exist on their own, off to the side, doing their own thing, whatever. Like, they don't... There's no reason for them to be in the movie.
They have to be in the movie because they're one of the... pinnacle points of the first film.
I hate you
they're
so
great
much.
In the second film.
I hate
and
you.
Even in the third film, they're shoehorned in there and they're still fine in that one, even though you don't like the whole scene at the end with the freaking whatever the hell. It doesn't make any sense to not include them.
And the fact that they snap people's necks in the third movie.
Think about it. Think about it,
that dude. They just fucking literally knock him down and fucking the one raptor grabs him by the head and snaps his neck. Like,
if they had
here.
Jurassic World, if they made this movie and raptors weren't in it, you know how many fans would flip the fuck
I
out
know.
Where are the raptors
I know.
Why wouldn't they re-engineer the raptors? I mean, we still know after the third film these dinosaurs aren't gone, they're still there, dude, they're not dead. So well, what about the raptors? Gotta have raptors. And it is fan service, and for me, I don't care. And I like that interaction because it's realistic. With large predators, we have lion tamers, we have tiger trainers, we have people that work with large predators, bears. It's been happening for 150 years. People have been doing this with these animals. So for me, it definitely takes away that mystique of the raptor, because for me, the biggest villain of the first Jurassic Park is not the T-Rex.
It's
the raptors.
Yep.
It's nightmare fuel, dude. Those things are scary as hell. And I love the way they're done in the first film. And you never get that back in any of the sequels. So for me, I'm already past that point. I've already seen the raptors in two other sequels. I'm cool seeing them in this. And one of my favorite scenes in the entire movie, I get a giant nerd boner from this scene. Every time it comes on, Nick, I get goosebumps. When I see Chris Pratt riding on a fucking motorcycle going through the jungle, the raptors are next to him, and they're like, eh! I'm like, oh my God, I'm in heaven. I love this. I want to tattoo that on my back.
Oh, Jesus
That's how much
Christ.
I love that.
Oh my
it's
God.
The coolest shit ever, man.
That was one of the big what trailer kid, money shots, of course.
What, Nick, what kid, seriously, what kid watching that movie would not want to be on a motorcycle riding next to velociraptors?
I don't even really have a problem with the fact that they can train raptors in the film. That part of it doesn't really... The problem I have with the raptors is they're not a park attraction. And, like, you have Chris Pratt's character who is rearing the raptors and training them and whatever. But for what purpose? Like, we know the InGen comes in, like, which he... Vincent D'Onofrio also works for the same fucking company. What up? Holy fuck. The corporate structure of Maserati and InGen is so fucked. But anyway, he comes in and he wants to use them for military purposes and everything like that. And Chris Pratt's like, no, we won't allow that. Like, but what is the purpose of keeping the raptors in the first place? Because they're not a park attraction. Why are they even there if you're not fucking using them for this purpose? Just to prove
it's just
that
research.
You can.
I feel like that to me is
so
also InGen plausible
spent, like,
at a lot of zoos.
$20 million engineering these fucking raptors just to prove that they could actually train them?
Well, there's only four of them, Nick. There's only four of them.
I mean, but they're expensive fucking animals, man.
And going back to the first film, You go back to the first film. Alan Grant asks Wu what question? You bred raptors? And we get a nod out of Wu. Let's talk about Wu. Let's please talk about Wu. What? Because when you watch that first film, Wu, would you ever think that he'd become some kind of evil, maniacal, crazy almost, geneticist?
Almost that, mustache twirling. Almost. Almost. He almost gets.
Almost on that level.
He almost gets to that level of cartoonish. And like I said, this is the biggest problem I have with the film. I get it. All you want to do is you want to have a plot device that causes dinosaurs to escape, hijinks ensue, people get eaten by dinosaurs, and you want to have fun action set pieces. I get that that's your formula for a Jurassic Park movie. That's fine. The problem is you have to make the script not insulting to anyone with even the most basic level of intelligence. Henry Wu stands in the fucking laboratory and says, "I'm not at liberty to divulge the genetic makeup of the Indominus Rex." Bullshit, you're not. You're talking to the dude that gives you your fucking paychecks. Like, why the fuck do you have all was there this clause that you signed in your contract that says I'm allowed to work for you but not tell you the work I'm doing for you? That's bullshit. 1,000% bullshit.
There is one line and this that is he some says, bunch Nick.
Of bullshit that Colin Trevorrow dreamed up in a bathtub with his dick in his hand. Period.
There's one line that he gives Wu that I really love, and it's basically a call out to all the dinosaur purists that are like
me.
These animals would be covered in feathers. The T-Rex would have head feathers. No one wants to see that. No. I understand that. I've done my research. I've watched a lot of documentaries.
More teeth, which is also the name of the breakfast cell I had.
And he says a lot of these animals wouldn't look like they're supposed to, but which you wanted like theme park attractions.
That's because there have been so many advancements in paleontology in the past 25 years since the original film came out. It's a good way to explain why the differences are still there.
Yes.
I actually because like
they did
that.
Try they did try in three to start giving the raptors head feathers, which I don't mind.
Head feather thing, yeah.
But I'm going to say though. I mean, personally, we all have our 1990s view of what dinosaurs look like in our heads, and they are the way they look in Jurassic Park. So for me, these are movies. This is fantasy. This is fiction. So I don't mind it. I want to see T-Rex with a bunch of feathers on it?
Like that they go there with that. I like that they give him that line because, like I said, it's a good explanation in universe for why the dinosaurs don't look like the dinosaurs that they would normally look like. I like that.
Yes.
I just don't include that scene in the script because for me, it is film breaking. It is that bad. This is why don't they move next to the waterfall levels of bad in a quiet place?
Shut up. You know how much shit you're going to get for mentioning that
all
again?
Of it. Literally all of it. Caleb gave me shit for it last week on the show. I don't care.
I'm going to tell you this much though. I really, for me as a fan of this franchise coming in, I do look forward to seeing what they're going to do with the dinosaurs. And for me, I love the Indominus Rex. I love the design of the animal.
I love the design.
I love what it does. I think it's badass. Every scene when it's doing crazy shit and it's causing mayhem, I love it. And it's got that sense of menace that you get from the original dinosaurs in the first film. And you know what? The other thing I want to mention about this movie, and I don't want to go over too far in this because but I'm saying
I was going to ask you a quick question. So
go ahead. Sure thing.
When they first go to the Indominus paddock and they think that it's missing, why don't they pull up the tracker? Until after they already go into it, mind you, they don't pull up the tracker, which just again, the script relies not on the intelligence of the dinosaurs, but on the stupidity of the people that are watching the dinosaurs. And that I have a huge problem with.
To be fair.
Get out of here.
To be fair, Jurassic Park relied on one man for all of it. And he was not trustworthy. And they already knew he had financial trouble. So
and he just didn't know how to fucking drive a Jeep in the rain. So
I mean, but just saying, Nick.
He's used to driving a mail truck in the city, Justin. He can't drive through the fucking jungle with a goddamn fucking...
It's fucking Newman. Newman can't do anything but deliver mail, okay? Remember, and as Newman says, on Seinfeld, we don't work in the rain. So...
There you go.
You have it there.
There you go.
But no, for me, you know, as we close out our thoughts on this movie, for me, I feel like, Nick, you know, the whole idea of having it at a working, functioning, operational park.
That I love.
This is the closest thing for me as a fan to getting back to that original magic
of the first film. I think it comes the closest in that sense. And for me as a fan, when I rewatched it recently again, I didn't lose that. Now, it's still, none of them will ever, can ever live up to the original, but I feel like they definitely put a lot of care and effort into trying to get it to that point where it's got the nostalgia to get you there, but it's still, it has that sense of awe and wonder of like you being as a viewer watching the animals, this is what it'd be like to be at a park with dinosaurs. Yeah. And I really love that. And the ending scene for me as a lover of monster movies and dinosaurs is one of the most entertaining, fun, energetic scenes of any of the sequels. I can't tell you enough. Anytime they say open Paddock 9 and you open it and then the drums go tsh, tsh, and it builds up and then you see the Tyrannosaurus. It's the Tyrannosaurus from the first movie. And they never went back to that in the other ones. This is the one from the original. You see the raptor scratches on her neck and she comes out. She's a little old and they bring her in to fight the Indominus. For me as a fan, you see her crush through the Spinosaurus skeleton for fan service to say, hey, all you fans out there, we knew what you were thinking about Jurassic Park 3,
right?
here's the payback. And that scene for me is gold. I love it so much. It makes the whole film
battle
for me.
And then great. And of course you get the raptors involved in it. Blue gets involved and everything. It's great.
And then the ending, when you don't even expect it coming, Nick, tell me that it's not great that the Mosasaurus comes out and grabs the Indominus and pulls it down. When would you ever expect that? It's definitely an awesome surprise for fans. You know, so for me, it gives the goods. It delivers the goods. I see awesome dino action. I get what you're saying, dude. I don't disagree with you 100%, but for me, Jurassic Park
movies...
But it
doesn't affect you the same way that it affects me. That's the difference. It's not that you don't even have the same problems. Like, you understand that I think that they're problems. You understand coming from, but it doesn't affect your enjoyment of the film, whereas it does affect my enjoyment of the film. I think that's the difference.
Well, you know what I do, Nick? When they come up, I just plug my ears and I close my eyes. That never happened.
What are you talking about? What the fuck? I want to get a job on the Jurassic World Asset Containment Unit because, man, their job is pointless.
You want to die?
The one you time they do their job, money to die? They fail spectacularly.
The scene that builds it up to them going off to go get the Indominus, it's got that heroic music, and you see them all grabbing their weapons and stuff. These guys are badasses. Oh, they're done in 2 seconds. You see on the screen, they're watching. They're all dead in like 5 minutes. Okay, you guys all suck at your job. Who would take that job? Do you really need the money that bad? Do you have that much child support? Seriously? Are you that much in debt with student loans? I have to go out. I'm going to hold this fucking baton, man. I'm going to go try to kill this giant killer dinosaur.
Fuck. Well, do it. Give it to me. Stamp the number on it. We've reviewed this film as the Epic Film Guys before.
You know that it's not going to be the same as it originally was. I'm going to be completely honest with you.
So it's going to be an 8 instead of a 9.
That's correct.
Yeah.
You're 100% correct. Yeah. It's going to be an 8. I think it's just been, for many fans, that's why it did so well at the box office. So many people were just ready for another Jurassic movie. We were getting, bombarded by comic book movies just like we still are today. But it was something that we missed and we remembered. It was nostalgic for us. And for me, that's probably why I had it as high as I did. But still a solid 8 out of 10. I still love the movie. It's still, personally, I'm not going to tell you where it is in the entire franchise until we get to Fallen Kingdom. But it's still one of my personal favorites of the franchise.
I will say this Thursday, because we're going to record it tomorrow. We're recording... This episode records... It's about 11:30 Sunday night. This episode is going to come out in about 6 hours. And we're going to record our Fallen Kingdom review, and that's going to come out on Thursday. But yeah, maybe we won't rank the franchise necessarily, but we'll kind of put Fallen Kingdom in amongst the other films wherever it may fall or whatever. So I'm actually going to stay with my original rating of this film. I'm going to stay with a 6 out of 10. I think there is enough magic here that's worth seeing in the end, but please, for the love of God, like Justin said, plug your ears during some of the sequences, because holy fuck, you will want to stab yourself in the eyes. Cause some of it is like, fuck you, Colin Trevorrow. God damn it. 6 out of 10.
You know, it's great that we get to sit down and talk about these. I really do love the fact that we're going and taking a look back at all these movies. Even Jurassic Park 3.
Yeah.
You know, I just want you guys out there I just want you guys that are listening to know, we did this for you. We listen to what you guys said. You want us to do stuff that we don't necessarily like, and you want us to touch bases on everything. And so that's what we did. And there you are. There you have it.
No one ever watch Jurassic Park 3 willingly unless they want to suffer. I guess that's what Justin's getting to.
You know what, Nick? I did see a guy the other day. There's the official Jurassic Park group on Facebook, and there's like I think 50,000 people in there. And there was this guy the other day that said, nothing will ever live up to the legacy of Jurassic Park 3. And I don't know if he was serious or not, but there may be that one guy out there. It led me to believe there may be someone out there that they have that Spinosaurus tattooed on their arm, and that's their favorite movie ever. But like, just saying, like Jake Johnson says in the film, as he's sitting there working at Jurassic World and he's wearing a Jurassic Park shirt, that first park was legit. I mean, people died and everything, but that says it all, man.
Oh, man. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, our Jurassic sequel retrospective on the eve, kind of our review of Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. Now, Justin and I have already seen the film. We did a remarkable job, I think, of steering clear of really going into anything that has to do with Fallen Kingdom. There's a lot to unpack there. We're going to be talking about that in full discussion in episode 149. We'll also be joined by the god of podcasting himself, the A1 Loy Steaksauce. He'll be here as well.
H-Oss.
And it's going to be an interesting discussion, to say the least. I have no idea where Justin falls on it. Justin has no idea where I fall on it. No idea where Loy Sauce falls on it. So we're all going to be coming at it just basically fresh and clean, like a freshly scrubbed baby T-Rex.
So fresh and so clean, clean.
But yeah.
Throwing some Outcast in there.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so, so very much for listening. Stay tuned again this Thursday for episode 149 for our full thoughts on Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. I am, of course, Epic Film Guy Nick.
And I am Epic Film Guy Justin. Thanks for listening, and we will see you
at
the movies.
Life cannot be contained. Life breaks free. Life finds a way.